Blog Talk Radio.
The place to come where we all can address the issue, debating different topics, bring friends and family with you. You can say what you want, speak whatever you feel. When Lizzie May and Tay in the building,
it's what?
It's real.
Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Welcome to It's Real Talk Radio. This is Rhett Thompson. I'm here with my co-host, Dollar Bill, and we have got an exciting show
What's up for you tonight.
Hello. How are you doing, Dollar Bill?
Pretty good. How about you, Rhett?
I am fantastic. I just want to tell all the listeners out there tonight that we are going to talk about the Milwaukee riots, that were sparked over the death of Savelle Smith, police shooting. Also, we're going to discuss, we have a great guest, Natasha Nefrini, who lives in Milwaukee, who's an all-around artist and witness to the riots. We also are going to talk about the Colin Kaepernick National Anthem controversy. And if you want to join in on the conversation, please give us a call. The number is 347-838-9540. That's 347-838-9540. But of course, you know that because you are already with us. So Dollar Bill, I know that you're up there, up north, up in Pennsylvania. Did you do your civic duty today? Did you vote today? Did you guys vote?
No, didn't vote today.
Uh-oh, dun-dun-dun. Did you guys even have voting up there? Or was it just me down here in Florida?
It was just you down in Florida.
Uh-oh, dun-dun-dun. Well, I will tell you this, that today was election day down here in the great state of Florida. I did vote. I usually do early voting because I like to avoid lines. We have early voting down here, so you can go to a general polling place like up to 3 weeks in advance at your convenience because they want to make it convenient for you.
Which is a great idea because a lot of people sometimes might have to work or have an emergency that day. I think that's wonderful they have early voting.
It is amazing. I love it because usually, unfortunately, you don't have to fight a crowd. It would be great to say that you had to wait in the line even for early voting because so many people are that anxious to vote. But generally, there's not much of a line. Generally, there's like a lot of polling workers there who will be more than happy to assist you. And it's usually a great thing. I've been doing that pretty much every year since I've been down here in the Miami area. But this year, I missed it. Things were just so crazy and so busy, so I had to actually wait for Election Day. But still wasn't as crazy as it could be, so I'm a little nervous about that. I went in to vote. Maybe it was like 5:30. So that's probably – I'm hoping that the reason why – it wasn't crazy is because people were just getting out of work and getting to the polling place and not because people were like, this is just like a little petty, a little rinky-dink election. We're not choosing Trump versus Hillary. So hopefully we have enough people who came out to vote, and we'll see what the results are in probably in about an hour down here.
Hopefully they pick good candidates then.
I hope so. The thing is, like, with this election, because it's a primary, I'm a registered Democrat. So for me, on the poll, on the ballot, it was mostly stuff like judges, and then there was, like, different state senators and then congressmen and local representatives. And I hate to say it, every time there's an election that has judges, I don't know who to vote for. I really, really don't, because I just don't follow them. So I just kind of use the little cheat sheet that the different unions will give out outside of the polling place as a hint. But then even then, I'm like, I'm not sure if this is. I'm trusting that these are good candidates. I got my fingers crossed. I guess, you know, I need to do my research.
When I hit that situation, like if there's a race that I don't know enough about either candidate, or if it's a primary and I don't know enough about either candidate, I usually just leave that one blank. And then I usually just vote for who I really know about. So.
No, go ahead.
And some people go in and they'll just pull. In Pennsylvania, I don't know if it is like this in Florida, where you can vote straight party. So some people, if they're a Democrat, they go in, they vote straight Democrat. Or if they're Republican, they can just pull one lever and it just votes for every Republican. And I just don't think that that should actually be on the, should be an option. I think you should have to kind of go through each one and then, like, pick, you know.
Right. So. Now, that would be a good system. It's just that here, because I'm a registered Democrat, I have to help sort out the candidates. So, like, all the Democrats that are running for, let's say, for all the Democrats that are running for Miami-Dade County, I got to pick one. So that was an easier choice because, you know, we've had the same guy in power for probably the last 6-8 years or whatever. And I'm like, he's done a decent job, but I think things could be a lot better. So I'm okay for him to kind of see his way out. Just to see if we got some fresh blood. But then out of those two, there's like one candidate that I think that she's good. I would like to give her a chance. And then there's four people that you're like, I've just seen them on random billboards. But I think this is more publicity stunt. Like, I don't really believe they really want to be the mayor. See, that's easy. That's easy to select. It's just that when you start getting to the people that, to be truthful, even though they're the small potatoes on the ballot, they're not running for president, those are the ones that really are going to be affecting my day-to-day life because they're the ones who are going to vote on things like buses, you know?
Yeah.
So that's where it gets...
All that stuff. Yep, all the local stuff.
Exactly. And this is what the concern is because, you know, if you don't vote on the local level, you can get mad at Obama or Hillary or Trump or whatever. But if you're not voting on the local level, like, you're really kind of missing out on having a say on somebody who affects your day-to-day life, you know? But, I don't know. I definitely need to do more research before the big election because I had to help my mom vote, and we're going through like the little local representatives, and my mom was like, "Oh, Moss, I'm gonna vote for him." I was like, "What do you know about Dennis Moss?" She was like, "Oh, because his name is on all the bus stops." Effective marketing. he has serious name recognition. He's been the representative down here for probably about 10, 12 years, and he keeps his name on all the bus stops, so that's why she knows who he is.
Is he part of the family that has the Moss excavating and does all that kind of stuff? I saw an interview about him on TV.
You know, to be honest with you, I really don't know. But I do know that, I don't know, he's been instrumental to, well, that's what they say, during his regime change during his regime, he's been able to get certain large projects done down here in my area of Miami-Dade County, like a large performing arts center and certain improvements for the roads, but I don't know how much of that is because of him, period, you know, versus something else, you know. So, but he definitely has been around. He's been around. Yeah. So.
Well, then they just had an episode of Undercover Boss about that family, I think, so.
Oh, for real. So I wonder if it is him, because, yeah, that would be interesting to see, you know, the real background. Because down here in Miami-Dade County, unless there's like a serious scandal, you don't really hear about what's going on. So, I don't know. I definitely got my work cut out. Yeah, definitely got
to
do that.
Yeah, it's hard to follow and get information a lot of times on these lesser offices, you know, like people running for, say, tax collector or different things. And it's almost boils down to, like, a popularity contest because, you know, you can't find out where they stand on different issues.
Exactly.
And certain offices, there's really not many issues for them to stand on, you know, so.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know, I think it's one of the things where you, as a citizen of this country, you really have to, as they say, stay woke. You have to stay woke on what's going on. You have to be aware of what's happening. You have to know what are the key issues, because whether it be something like more money for schools or the folks on your police force, you know, those are the people that help make those decisions. You know, that money gets funneled or maybe it's allocated from Washington, but a lot of times it's those state and local representatives that really have their hands on it, who could disperse those funds. So it's really important to be on top of that.
Yes, it is.
So what you know? So with that being said, another, I guess, being an aware citizen, we turn to our main topic at hand, which is the Milwaukee riots that were sparked by the police shooting death of Seville Smith. So according to reports, Seville Smith was a 23-year-old African-American man that was shot. Like, I guess there was a police stop. I guess I'm trying to condense this. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, he and another gentleman were in a car. There was a police stop. This is where we're a little bit unclear of what exactly happened. Supposedly, Mr. Smith and his, I guess, his passenger was in the car. They attempted to flee, and that's where there was a policeman who shot and killed him. So now the thing is, this happened in the Sherman Park area of Milwaukee. From what I understand, this is an area that's predominantly African American, and there had been some issues with policing, and this particular police officer, I guess this is where it gets murky, because Seville Smith, the victim, the deceased, they said he had been arrested multiple times. This is according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So he had been arrested multiple times, but never convicted of a felony. Did have a concealed carry. His family says that he was a concealed carry permit holder, so he could legally possess a gun. Relatives remembered him as a soft soul who loved animals, children, dancing. He has a 2-year-old son. The police officer who was involved, Dominic Hegan, 24, also African-American, began his career as a police aide in 2010 and became a sworn officer 3 years later, was recognized by the police department in 2014 for helping a homeless woman. But earlier this month, he was accused of using a taser on a man without justification at a gas station in April, according to notice of claim, alleged excessive, unreasonable, and unjustifiable force. So so basically after the shooting, that was the trigger of 2 days of riots in the Sherman Park area of Milwaukee. But also, too, what's interesting about this case, allegedly, according to family and people on the who are in the know, it seems that Mr. Smith, the victim, and Mr. Hagen, the police officer, may have actually known each other and may have even gone to school with each other. And maybe have known each other because of the Milwaukee music scene. Dollar Bill, you said that you mentioned that you had some information on that.
Yeah, I heard that Dominic Hagen was goes by the name of KB Domo and had a couple rap videos on YouTube, and I watched.
Are you serious? The police.
Yeah.
This is the police officer. Oh my God.
Yeah. They said he was like a 6-year veteran of the force, and I guess has been like an officer for 3, and like you said, had worked with other part of the department for 3 years. And then some people were saying about the lyrics in his raps, talking about selling drugs, referencing the burning of Baltimore and different things like that. One of the videos where they had a picture of a young African-American man in a police officer uniform and then another man like in street clothes, and they're saying it's the same person, Dominic Hagen. So I haven't verified if that's true or not, but, you know, I just saw that on YouTube and thought it was kind of interesting and relevant.
So the police officer, he was actually rapping, allegedly. He's an actual, like, or is he just like part of the entourage in the background? That makes a huge difference. Like, is he spitting lyrics or he's just hanging out?
No, he's spitting lyrics. He's got a flow.
Wow.
Pretty flow. Yeah, if it's him, yep, it's good flow. And it was just they were questioning some of the lyrics that maybe as an officer he shouldn't have had this stuff posted on Facebook and YouTube. So
now, were they saying that about his lyrics before or after the shooting?
After the shooting.
Mm.
All this has come up afterwards. And the whole case seems kind of murky. You know, they said that Seville Smith, you know, had, you know, a record of different things. I heard that the gun that he was carrying was stolen from a nearby neighborhood, and that, you know, his family says he has a concealed permit, but I haven't heard if that was verified or not. I was just wondering, you know, if the facts had come out about the officer doing the shooting was African-American, if that would have came out earlier, if we would have had the same response from the local community. What do you feel about that?
That is a very interesting question, because I think this is where when you have people, when we stop identifying people as people, but as more as a group. Like, so for example, when you just see, like, when police are just seeing a group of African-American men as, okay, there goes a bunch of potential troublemakers, and then those African-Americans look at the police as, okay, I just see a wall of blue, but not in a positive way. I see this is, you know, almost like a paramilitary force who's out to get me, who's out to destroy me. You know, so
which the police department has become. They've become very militarized, which I think is very excessive. You know, like the weapons and the armored vehicles and, you know, tactical everything.
Well, what's interesting about this particular police officer, from what I was gathering, he was in some type of high school program that was trying to get more police officers in from the community. So mm-hmm. That's why he became a police aide, I guess. And then from there, he was able to join the police academy. So he kind of, the way they framed it, he was an apprentice pretty much, and then he became like this hard-nosed cop, you know, patrolling the streets. However, uh-huh. with that, according to people from some of the people from the community, he was also known for being very rough. Like he could be he was known for being the police officer that would give you a hard time versus someone who was part of building up the community.
Yeah, I mean, if he was charged with using a taser, you know, without justifiable cause and, you know, harming a civilian, why was he still out on the street? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, see, I think this is what's interesting, too. I really do believe it depends on which side of the coin or which side of the police officer you interacted with. Because if you look at this case, the way it's been presented in the media, just like with a lot of other, unfortunately, we've had so many of these police-related shootings in 2016, first you have the shooting. There seems to be a pattern. First you have the shooting. Then you have, you know, the release of a video. Then you have the dragging of the whoever has been killed, whoever that person is. Somehow they find out that there's, like, a criminal background or criminal element to him. And then there's the thing about the cop. Initially, he may have been a hero, but now he's the worst thing since Training Day. So somewhere in the middle, there's got to be the truth. It's somewhere in there. Now, when it comes to Seville Smith, they have brought out that, again, the gun appears, even though he had a concealed weapons permit, according to his family, that the gun itself was reported stolen. Early in 2016, it was stolen from a house along with many, many rounds of ammunition. But Mr. Smith's background himself, they mentioned that there may have been some petty crimes in there, maybe some theft, maybe there was some shoplifting in there, you know. But when you're in this situation as a police officer, and you're doing this stop, in most cases, for most reasonable people, you don't necessarily know what that guy's background is unless you've personally interacted with him. So, you know, so I guess this is the question of, like, how was this shooting justifiable?
Well, I guess if the officer saw the gun, then they could and he was fleeing in order to stop, I guess they could consider that justifiable. I mean, I'm not an expert on that, but like you said, just because somebody has some petty arrest records for shoplifting and things like that doesn't make them like a monster criminal. And I also read reports that the man had been diagnosed with learning disabilities and some mental illness and had been in specialized education all through elementary and high school. So that might have factored into it also.
Yeah, there's definitely many layers going on here. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they report that according to preliminary information provided by Milwaukee city officials, Smith was shot when he ran from a traffic stop about 3:30 p.m. on August 13th. Police Chief Edward Flynn has said body camera footage shows Smith was armed and turning toward Officer Dominic Hegan, who then opened fire. But the thing is, that footage, according to this article, this was on the 26th, so this is a couple days ago, has not been released publicly, which has caused frustration and mounting speculation among some residents and activists. So
when that's not released publicly, you know, if it's released, say, like a month after the shooting, you don't even know if the tape's been edited or tampered with, you know, or anything at that point. I think that that kind of stuff should be released almost immediately to clear up any speculation.
Yeah, they're saying that the reason why the video wasn't, I agree with you. I agree. When you have this type of shooting, I do think that it would make things better with the family and with the community if you would be able to see what's going on, even though it's very painful to see this type of altercation, which results in your loved one's death. It would lift that shroud of this shroud of secrecy. But from what I'm gathering, they did not want to release the video. They both officers had body cameras, but the police department was not compelled to release the video unless they were pretty much. Unless it was like a case going to trial, like if it was going to have to be presented to the grand jury or something along those lines.
We don't know what would have happened if those would have been released immediately. Maybe there wouldn't have been any riots, or maybe there would have been riots instantaneously. But I think at some point, there should be a site where those could be viewed immediately. And I think that all police officers should have those body cams because you get into a case of he said, she said, and that can clear up a lot of things. And a lot of times people that are accused of crimes and they go to trial, who's the court and the jury going to listen to, the police officer or the poor kid that's standing in the courtroom, you know?
I agree. Because we've evolved into a society where every single person has a cell phone, everybody is videotaping things, it's almost like we're expecting to see some type of video.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's going to clear everything up. And it's not perfect in every case because, you know, body cameras, you know, somebody turns something off, sometimes the angle is bad, sometimes the lighting is bad. It's not a perfect technology, but I do agree that I do think that would help. That would help things initially.
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
go ahead.
I think with cell phones and everything, I think a lot of this stuff would never make it to the media and would be covered up. I mean, like the therapist who was shot down in Miami. I mean, somebody got
uh-huh.
that with a cell phone. The one guy in the Carolinas that was shot. I mean, a lot of this, the Alton Sterling down in Baton Rouge, that was caught, like, on cell phone. And if none of that stuff would have got caught, this could have been all swept under the rug, I think.
But my big question...
Philando
uh-huh.
Castro, what his fiance did. I mean, you know, she filmed that and put it on Facebook live, and then the police shut down her Facebook page almost immediately. You know,
Exactly. But see, my question is, okay, we have these horrible incidents where someone gets shot, someone is shot, someone's killed, but not every shooting results in a riot. So
yeah.
I think this is where this is like a big question. Like, what really sparked this particular riot? Because this was not just word got out that he got shot, and then there was a fight in the street with the police. Like, there was actually a neighborhood that now there's several businesses that no longer are existing right now because they were burned to the ground.
Yeah, which
so,
is a shame.
Right. So where did that spark? Where did that kind of like set off? Did that go from there? Yeah, like how did it build up to that point?
It puzzles me sometimes why some areas have a riot and other areas don't. Like when Tamir Rice was shot in Cleveland, the young boy at the park, I would have thought there would have been a big riot over that because from what I saw of the video that was released from the surveillance camera at the park, that looked like a very unjustified shooting. And then, you know, like, and also the therapist down in Miami and stuff. The poor guy was sitting on the ground with his hands in the air, and they shot him, you know.
Exactly, exactly. So I think this is where we and our listeners are going to get some great insight on. I am going to introduce our guest, Natasha Nefrany. Natasha, hello, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I am fine. I wish that we were interviewing you or having this conversation with you under better circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. And I got a chance to hear, like I came in right at a good time to hear what you guys had to say. So when I was invited to the show, I was like, yeah, I can definitely speak on that. And like you said, it's definitely been crazy, like very emotional on this side of town.
Yeah, we really talking to somebody that's in the area can tell us what's really going on.
So, Natasha, for those of us who are not familiar with Milwaukee and the Sherman Park area, could you kind of like set the scene? Like, what is that area like? What is like the setup of Milwaukee? Like, how, you know, because when I think of huge concentrations of black people, I do not think of Milwaukee off the top of my head, you know? So could you set it up? Like, how is it divided? Is it more racially mixed? Is it segregated? Like, how is the whole layout of that area?
You know, what I found out, and it's something you don't think about, like I was born and raised here, you don't think about it, but what I found out through working with a nonprofit within this last year they're focused on such as racial inequality and things like that, is that Milwaukee is number one in the nation for being one of the most segregated cities. It's crazy. I was like, oh, my God. But then you sit and you think about it, because on the north side, that's where all the blacks stay on the north side in the urban communities. And then you got like, I say, like middle south side, not far south, and that's mostly like Hispanics. All the Hispanics stay there. And then the downtown area it's sort of like, you know, mixed a little bit, not much. A lot of the college students stay down there. And then you go further out south, and it's mostly, you know, white families stay out there. So it's very segregated here. It's very segregated. And you see that when you drive around, because I grew up on the north side, and then when I went to college, I migrated on the south side. And you notice that all the cops are on the north side. You got a few on the south side. You might have like one or two set up, but then you'll have like 50 all on the north side, just out there. And you just see the differences with the communities. Like you got some places that's kind of run down on the north side. You got some areas that's kind of nice. And then even where all the Hispanics stay, it's kind of the same, kind of run down, somewhat nice. And then all the big, beautiful homes are all further south where all the white communities are. Or if the white communities who stay out in the country. Because, like you said, when people think of Wisconsin or Milwaukee, you think of country or a big farm. And we do have a lot of farmland. We have a lot of farmland here.
I'm like, where's the cheese heads?
And that's normal because, you know, because we're known for our cheese and our milk and whatnot. But it's like, that's more like coming and going. So you're coming, you're coming up from the south, you're going to hit a lot of the land before you hit the city. Or if you're coming down from the north, you're going to really hit a lot of the farmland there. We're like, all the city is like in the middle of Wisconsin. But, it's very segregated here, very segregated.
It's very interesting that you say that, because you would think that, like, cities in the south, places in the south, like Miami, definitely we have our enclaves of where like certain people historically have lived, so they just continue on, but we don't really think of it as so much of a segregation because we're down in the south, so it's just
right.
Par for the course, you know. But
yeah,
with Milwaukee being so segregated, what, you know, an actual riot jumped off because of the shooting, like,
yeah.
Well, have there been other, like, shootings that have happened within the past year that I mean, look, Milwaukee's not burning every day, you know. So,
no, it's not, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm curious if there were other incidences that may have happened that kind of led up to this point, or was that this one was just so egregious that, you know, people just, you know, just lost control?
You know, it's like a combination of things. If I'm not mistaken, when I came in, I heard the gentleman mention, and I don't know if he was talking about us here, but I think so, gentleman who was shot in the park by the cops. Like, it was like just a combination of things over the last 2 years that have been happening where, like, you had that gentleman who was shot. And also recently, before Seville, who was shot recently, there was another gentleman, I want to say about a month or two ago, who were in another park, who was shot by a cop. He was shot by a white cop. He was a black guy. He was sitting in his car. And they're still being very mum on those details. Nothing has been released. The family doesn't even know what is going on. So
it's
have,
been
it's
a
like, it's been a few incidents where what happened was when these were going on, it was just like there were marches or there were slight protests that went on in the city. But then with everything going on in other cities too, with the two gentlemen being shot and all that footage circulating, and then you have we have community leaders who've been standing up against that here in the city, and then you have this. So it's like people was just already like just itching. It was just like it was just burning. It was like, okay, we're just sick and tired. And then on top of that, with it being very segregated here, you have issues where you have a lot of the young black teens who are like they just get harassed just going to play ball. They get harassed just walking down the street to the store. Like the cops pull over just harassing them. So there's already that hate.
A lot of tension.
For
yeah.
cops in the city, there's a lot of tension already here. So when that happened, it was just the boiling point. There's been so many little things going on up until then it just exploded.
Now, I saw video of what looked like video from the day or the afternoon of the scene of the crime where it
yeah.
looked like there was like a whole, they had sent down a whole bunch of police officers, and then you see people who are upset in the street. And in the beginning, you know, you do have people kind of like walking around and like really, you know, you could feel their frustration. They're yelling at the police. The police are just standing there. They're not wearing riot gear. They don't have any helmets on. I mean, they do have vests on, but you
yeah.
know, they don't have any shields. There's none of that. And then as time goes on, you could see that the police. They eventually load up into the wagons and they drive off, and then it's like that one last cop car, that one last, like the last sheep in the Sahara or the last antelope, whatever. And I don't know, maybe that cop car was like too late or what. And it seems like someone ran up and kicked the car, or they were a long time and they kicked the car,
yeah.
And then that stopped, and then it seemed like. You could. I'm watching this, and it's a couple days after the fight. I was like, "Oh my God, this is bad. They should just let the cop go.
Yeah.
You should just let him go." You know.
Yeah.
And this is what the type of thing that you know some people like outsiders see that, and they're like, "Okay, well, rioters are just a bunch of troublemakers.
Yeah,
they just wanted to have a fight with the cops."
Yeah, I saw.
I think that's only a small percent of the people, though, that really do any rioting or looting or anything like that. I think that's just a small percentage of the demonstrators. And I think the media likes to focus on that small percent because that helps their ratings and stuff. They want to film the worst of the worst, you know. They don't want to show the peaceful people. They don't want to show peaceful people walking around and protesting.
Right.
They want to show people tearing stuff up and burning stuff down, you know?
Yeah, because there's been a few different, and even before this happened with, you know, with Sterling and the other guy who were shot down, like, there were peaceful protests here. And that barely got any news coverage.
Yeah.
If you weren't on Facebook, you probably wouldn't. Like, I found out about these through Facebook. Like, the news didn't cover that. But like he said, once everything went ablaze, like, I, when I saw, because our city making all the big top news sites and blog sites and trending all on Twitter, I was just like, oh, my God. And then I already knew what type of, you know, backlash it was going to get because a lot of these blogs I follow and I like to read comments, so I kind of know the mindset of some people. And it was like people, oh, just a bunch of thugs and just all this generalization, all the hood people and all on welfare and look what they're doing. And it's just like, no, that's not the case at all. Like, I will say, me and my boyfriend, we live, like, very close to where everything was happening. But when it was going on, we had just got home around 10 o'clock and logged on Facebook, and we were seeing videos as it, people were posting videos and stats as it was going on. So we were like, oh, my God, what's going on? And I remember when I was pulling up to the park, like, I was seeing all these fire trucks and cop cars flying, but I didn't think none of them because, to be honest, on the north side of Milwaukee, there's crime. There's a lot of crime. So you see a cop car or you see an ambulance or a fire truck, you're okay, something happened again. It's another day. But when I got home and I saw it on Facebook and I saw the burning of the gas station first before all the other buildings, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, it felt like he was watching something today. It just didn't seem real. And then the next day, we had a friend's wedding to go through. We had to actually drive through that area. You just see all the buildings burned down. You see the bank. You see the beauty supply stores. You see the auto parts store. You just, it's kind of like you're in shock. You're like, oh, my God, this really happened here in my city. And it's like literally blocks from us where it was all going on.
Wow. That is just crazy. That is crazy. Well, we have a question for you. I guess Sheriff David Clark.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the question is that he's made some very controversial statements towards other police brutality cases, and now it's happening in his town. What is the attitude on Sheriff David Clark? Is he African American or is he white?
He's African American, but it seems like I've never been a fan of him, and it seems like he's trying to please someone, and so it's like he's totally against the urban community here. Like, how would I put this? And here's just my theory on it. And I found out, I want to say maybe a year ago, that Wisconsin holds the headquarters for the KKK. Okay? I did not know this. And a lot of things, one, we're segregated as hell. There's a lot of racism here. It's like ridiculous, you know. And then you have Sheriff Clark, you know, where he lives and the people he works with. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe he has to play this role, or he's been so brainwashed because he's around a lot of these men who have this supremacist mindset. So every time he gets on TV, we here in the city, we're just like, oh, here he go. We know he's going to say something crazy. He's going to say something. And true enough, he says something crazy, and he's trending on Twitter, or he's all on news stations, and people are like, and then we look like fools. And people, someone else said that on Twitter, like, is he black? Is he white? What is he? Because he doesn't act like a man who cares about the black community here in Milwaukee. You're supposed to be the face. So I'm not a fan of him. And like I said, I think he's playing for the other side. Like I said, I don't think that every person who's not black is racist, but there's a lot of people in power here who are, and he's around those people. So I wonder if that has a lot to do with how his stance, because that's how we feel.
I just did a quick search on him, and I guess he's an elected, let's see, in 2002, let's see, it's saying he's 60 years old. He was born in Milwaukee, which is interesting. The way you kind of like framed it, I thought maybe he was an outsider, but it looks like he was born in Milwaukee. He was appointed to the vacancy by the governor, and elected that same year to his first 4-year term. And then, although registered and elected as a Democrat, it seems that a lot of his views are aligned with conservative Republicans.
Yeah, because I actually found out recently, I was like, okay, I don't like him. I don't really follow him. But then I think my boyfriend told me, like, you know, he's a Democrat, right? And I was like, what? Because he doesn't come across as a Democrat. Like, I would have never guessed it at all.
Maybe he just says things like that to get reelected.
It looks like he has a quote here. Calling 911 and waiting is no longer your best option. You can beg for mercy or you can fight back. Consider taking a safety course in handling a firearm so you can defend yourself until we get there.
Wow.
I'm afraid now to go to Milwaukee.
It's like you always hear about, you know, for the past few years you always heard about Chicago and
mm-hmm.
how crazy, you know, the murder rate is there with all the guns and whatnot and all the shootings. But then it seems like it started to increase here a lot. We were like, what the hell is going on? So then we were thinking maybe a lot of the people were coming up here, because the thing is they changed a lot of laws here as far as like where people like get their cars broken into or like drug dealing. Like a lot of stuff is just being like, oh, that's minor now on our list. So then you have a lot of like these drug dealers and stuff that come up from Chicago to sell, and then they go back, and what they do, they don't set up in houses, they set up in their cars, because now they have a law where it's like harder to catch these guys in the car. So now it's like all the crazy people or all the people with the guns that's ready to blast, they're all up here now, and they're coming up here. So now it's like we're taking over Chicago's rep, and it's crazy because it's like I was telling somebody, I was born and raised here. But it's like there are certain parts of the city I won't go to because people just are crazy and people are quick to pick up a gun. You hear about somebody getting shot down all the time here now, all the time.
That is
so a lot of the recent problems are from people from other areas moving in then.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what is Dollar Bill had mentioned that there's talk that the victim and the shooter – the police officer and the victim may or may not, they may have known each other from like the hip hop scene, in the music scene in Milwaukee, that Soville Smith was like a dancer and that Dominic Hagen was more like a rapper. Have you heard anything of that? Has there been any discussion on that?
I heard that KB Domo was his rap name.
That stuff all started coming out like right, like say everything happened on Saturday. All that stuff started coming out like Sunday, Monday, in regards to the officer's background. And actually was the one who stated that they knew each other. It went back to they went to the same school and to like the music scene, and that they actually had some kind of like they had words with each other. They had some kind of beat. So then, you start putting two and two together. Like maybe this was, you know, it wasn't just some random shooting or a cop coming onto the scene and maybe something was suspicious was going on and he shot. Like maybe he was looking for him and they had some kind of beef, and, you know. Because then the thing is, the cop, back in his rapper days, he actually, they released like some lyrics from a song he did, and he actually was talking about shooting somebody and wanting to cause a riot in the city. Like these were his lyrics back when he was rapping, and it was kind of like you actually did that, like you accomplished that when you shot this guy. And then what's even crazier is I have a brother, and we have different dads. My brother and sister, we have different dads, and that's their cousin on their dad's side. And I've never met this gentleman, so I never met Seville. I don't know
the
much
police
about
officer?
Him.
No, the police officer or the victim?
No, the victim. So they were all, when I went on and I was seeing all the rest in peace stats, and then I saw my sister and my brother, like, rest in peace, cousin, and then, you know, their uncle's also on Facebook, and so he was putting up his emotional post, and I'm like, wow. So for them, it was very, very close to home. But what's crazy is a lot of their friends have been dying this year, so they're, like, been so numb to it, but it was just crazy to see that. And then, so, I mean, I don't know much about him. People say, like, he didn't have a felony record. He did some stuff here and there, and they say that he really started to get guns and carry guns because he had been robbed quite a few times in the past. So him having his guns were for his protection. Because I heard that he had a firearm that was illegal, but I also heard he had legal ones, too. Like, he was registered, so he had both. But
right.
Yeah, and then it's like you hear so many stories, and I also heard that, you know, know, the cop came onto the scene because apparently somebody was still in the car or, like, something suspicious was going on. So that's what led the cop there. But then when the sister went on record to say, no, they knew each other and they had a beef, that kind of, like, counteracts it, like, what's really going on. And then I saw today that they're not even going to release the footage. You know, like, the cops have the cameras on their uniforms now.
Right, the body
cam. Yeah. And they
that
were supposed to.
Yeah.
They said they were going to release the footage for that, but now they're saying that there's a possibility they won't release the footage to that. So now everybody's speculating as to why they're not going to put the footage out in regards to that. And then you find out that the cop, of course, he got a lot of death threats towards him and his family after that happened. So from what I heard, word on the street is that they have him in protective custody so that nobody can get to him because he's received a lot of death threats since the shooting.
Oh, I can imagine,
Well, you know, I think that that's a very interesting element. If it, like, look, I do not wish any type of ill will,
right.
But it makes a huge difference if this is two people that know each other and this was sparked from some type of beef from something that's totally outside of, you know, law enforcement, you know, because nowadays you cannot have a black man getting shot in the middle of the afternoon by a police officer. You know, you are going to have, like the whole focus of the country is going to be on what is going on, what is happening, what are the circumstances of that.
Yep, that's true.
I think that it makes it, I mean, these are not the right words, but it makes it a little better if you think that, okay, this is a beef between two people, and unfortunately one person may have been able to manipulate the situation so he could, you know, get the other person.
Yep.
But the flip side is,
Do you think the outcome would have been any different or been any worse if the officer doing the shooting was white?
You know what, I think it would have been worse given everything that has been going on because I was actually surprised at everything that went on once I found out that the cop was black. Cause I say that because everything that's been going on with all the other black men being shot down by white cops and, you know, how everyone has been protesting that or speaking out against that. So you think that when I first heard this happen and they said, oh, he was shot by a cop, I automatically
assumed it was a white cop. Yeah, that's what I assumed.
Yeah.
Now,
so when I heard the cop was black, I'm sorry.
Do you think if they would have released the information that the officer was black, that might have prevented the riots initially if they would have released that immediately?
You know what? I would say no because just the word cop, like black cop, white cop, that a cop, no matter, just the word cop, like here, people don't like that word. They don't like the uniform. I've even seen, and I've been disappointed because I've even seen community leaders here who get a lot of respect and people look up to them go on and say, you know, F the police. I don't like cops. Like, so it's just, that mentality is already here because of you do have situations, like I said before, we're very segregated here, so you've had instances that don't make the news of the blogs or Facebook of, you know, you have four black guys driving a car through Menominee Falls here, which is predominantly mostly a white area with a lot of good businesses, and they'll get pulled over because they're black and they're driving through Menominee Falls. Like, that's the thing here. They'll get pulled over, get pulled off the car, get searched and all of that. So people just, a lot of them don't like cops here, period. So I think when people just hear the word cop, shooting, smell, boom, there you go. That's really all it takes.
Is there tension between the police and the Latino community?
You know, I don't hear much about that. I've honestly only heard maybe one instance. But the thing is, going online, you hear that it happens in that community just as much, but they don't get as much coverage. So if you're not in that community, you don't know that it's going on. So you don't really hear about it a lot. So I don't know for sure.
So
okay.
What are the thoughts? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask, like, what's the percentage of whites to blacks to Latino in the area, in the city?
In an urban city? And I don't know the percentage before, so you want me to do, like, a guesstimate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, guesstimates are fine. We don't expect you to have done the census, but I'll go around. No worries.
In the city, I would say I can guesstimate about, I want to say, 80 to 85% blacks stay here. You do have some Hispanics that are mixed in there, but they're mostly Southside. And then whites, it's not that many in the city. You can go, say once you get past, like, 85th Street, and you start going into close to the hundreds, and then you may have some white people sprinkled out through there, because the myth is, and it is a myth, the further out you go, the better the area is. But it seems like there are more and more blacks that are just taking up all of the city area and even moving further out. So you just have them sprinkled out. The whites are kind of more towards downtown or further out towards the country areas, or further out south, like by the airport and past the airport.
And
they put all the white cops in the city.
And I saw how, like, some of the riot then changed, where they were just targeting, like, any random white person that was in the area.
Yeah.
How did that jump from, like, you know, having anger towards the police in general just to any random white person?
And when I saw that, because there was people, they were putting videos on Facebook and putting up posts about that, and that was disgusting to me. Because
that
I'm
was
like,
very
okay.
scary. Oh, my gosh,
yeah, very,
scary.
Very scary. And it's like, and these people were passing through, like, depending on, like, no matter where you go, mostly in the city, you're going to have to go through an urban area. You're going to have to drive through to get to where you have to go. These people were passing through, and then I heard they're just getting pulled out of their cars and getting beat up. And I'm like, that's not, you can be angry about what's going on. You have a right to be pissed off about everything that's been going on, because it hasn't been right. But to do that, I feel like you're being no better than the white cops who are just shooting down these black, unarmed black men and pinning stories. Like, it's like you can't fight fire with fire. You can't go after innocent people. These people are innocent. Like, they're not the ones out here doing the stuff. And so it's like you're looking.
And some people might even be coming down to join the protest, to stand beside, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. Yeah.
And I've seen that, like, before that happened, when you had more of the peaceful protests going on, you had, like, mixed crowds of people. You had whites and Hispanics and blacks all together wearing the Black Lives Matter shirts, marching and protesting all together. But for some reason, this here, when they had the riots and they were setting all the buildings ablaze, it was like you start having people. And I just think those are, like, a few, I want to say idiots. I don't want to be harsh, but you just have some people that were just out there doing stuff just to be doing something. They saw, oh, this is going on. Let me go out here and just join this, and let me just go beat up white people. And they probably just already just didn't like white people, or just being ignorant. Like, it's just really misguided, because that's just not the way you handle things. Because it's like, just try to think, if you're in the urban area now where it's mostly African-American, so you feel safe. But what if everything was going down in Menominee Falls or in Franklin or St. Francis, where it's predominantly white, and you may have some KKK people walking around there, and then all of a sudden you got innocent black people getting pulled out of cars, beat, and God forbid, lynched or something, because some shit was set ablaze out there. Like, you have to really just think. You know, you can't be out here fighting fire with fire. Nothing's going to get solved with doing it. And I think that really just made tensions even worse. Because I was telling my boyfriend, after all that happened, I went into work Monday. And where I work, it's a small company, but it's predominantly Caucasian. A lot of white people work there. I am the only black person and the only black woman in the whole company that works there. And then we have one Hispanic guy that works in sales downstairs. So it was kind of like, when you walk in, it's normally like a really easygoing place where everybody's like older and everybody's all cool and everything, but you just felt like just awkward tension in the air. And then I remember walking to my desk, and I sit right outside the office of my boss, and in his office was a lady who sits on the other side of the wall from me, and they were like, they were talking, heard them talking about it, and then once I started approaching my desk, I started whispering about it. And normally, when you had situations where cops, white cops were shooting black men and it was making the news, we could all just freely talk about it. It was a very unbiased conversation. But if for some reason when this happened, I think because it was too close to home, it was kind of like nobody wanted to talk to me about it. Well, before, they won't be the first to ask my opinion on everything. But this, nobody wanted to talk about it. It was kind of like they talked about it, they whispered, everybody just went back to their desk. And it made me feel uncomfortable. I'm like, oh, my God, what are they thinking? What's going on? Like, I felt really uncomfortable when I went into work that following Monday.
Wow.
Yeah, well, it's hard to hear that.
I think it would be really great to like, as this case evolves, that, and hopefully things in Milwaukee evolve, that we'll be able to touch base with you and see what your perspective is. Natasha Nefrani, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your perspective on what's gone on with this case and being such a great friend of the show. So at this point, what do you have coming up next, and where can people find you out on social media and whatnot?
All right. I am currently working on my music projects. I do hip-hop, and I am currently also shooting some indie projects, movies here. So people can follow me. You can follow me on Instagram, and that's at Natasha Nefrani. And Nefrani is spelled N-A-F-R-I-N-I, so Natasha Nefrani on Instagram and Twitter. And you can also find my Facebook page, and that's /TheNefrani. People can go on there and follow me and be able to stay up to date with all the projects I have going on. And I definitely want to say thank you for inviting me on the show and for having me. And, yes, I'm definitely a good friend of the show. I enjoy the show and the host. But, yeah, thank you for thinking of me to come and speak on this situation, because it's not always easy about it, and it was really close to home, so it was just definitely like a lot of emotions flowing in the air. So I'm glad I was able to just come and give my perspective to people from the outside looking in. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, everyone. We're going to take a bit of a break. We'll be back. Remember, call in to chime in, 347-838-9540. We're going to be talking about the Kaepernick situation with the Star-Spangled Banner after this.
Drum, please.
Slightly transformed, just a bit of a break from the norm, just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix, and if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past, adjust the bass and let the alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme, and put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime. Out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzo's. Back in Philly, we be out in the park. A place called the Plateau is where everybody goes. Guys out hunting and girls doing likewise. Honking at the honey in front of you with the light eyes. She turn around and see what you beeping at, It's like the summer's a natural aphrodisiac, and with a pen and pad I compose this rhyme to hip you and to get you equipped for the summertime. Short set. Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair, cause basketball courts in the summer got girls there. The temperature's about 88. Hop in the water plug, just for old time's sake. Break to your crib, change your clothes once more, cause you're invited to a barbecue to start at 4. Sitting with your friends, as y'all reminisce about the days growing up and the first person you kissed. And as I think back, makes me wonder how the smell from a grill can spark off nostalgia. All the kids playing out front, little boys messing around with the girls playing double dutch, while the DJ spinning a tune as the old folks dance at your family reunion. Then 6 o'clock rolls around, you just finished wiping your car down. It's time to cruise, so you go to the summertime hangout. It looks like a car show. Everybody come looking real fine, fresh from the barbershop, applying from the beauty salon. Every moment fronting and maxing, chilling in the car, they spend all day waxing. Leaning to the side, but you can't speed through 2 miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
With an album. I wonder is after death, after my last breath. When will I finally get to rest through this depression? They punish the people that's asking questions and those that possess. Still from the ones without possessions, the message I'm stressed. To make it stop, study your lessons, don't settle for less. Even the genius asks questions, be grateful for blessings. Don't ever change, keep the essence of power is in the people and politics we address. Always do your best, don't let depression make you panic. And when you get stranded and things don't go the way you planned it, dreaming the riches, in a position of making a difference. Politicians are hypocrites, they don't want to listen. If I'm insane, it's the fame made a proper change. It wasn't nothing like the game, it's just me against the world.
It's Real Talk Radio. This is Rhett Thompson. I'm here, back here with my co-host, Dollar Bill. Dollar Bill.
Hey, what's up? What's up, everybody?
So we just wrapped up our conversation with our guest, Natasha Nefri, who is a friend of the show, all-around artist and a resident of Milwaukee. She shared her thoughts on the experience of the Milwaukee riots that was sparked by the police shooting death of Savelle Smith. That was very, very, I never really gave thought of Milwaukee besides, except the cheese and the milk. I did not realize that Milwaukee was so segregated, Bill.
Yeah, I would have never thought that either. You know, that's something that I experienced, like, in southern cities, you know, kind of like Atlanta and places like that, but I never expected that in a northern city. So that was interesting to hear.
Yeah, very much so. So, you know, hopefully she'll be able to keep us posted on what's going on there, because it seems that we're still trying to sort through all the details, trying to see if the video will be released, trying to see if this was a case that is more about a police brutality shooting or if this was basically a street beef over some music.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting side note that a lot of the media hasn't covered. I saw the Dominic Keegan, the officer's one rap video on YouTube, and it was kind of interesting, and I just wonder where it's going to go from here.
That is a very good point, Doug. Like Milwaukee is burned for 2 days, and now and Mr. Smith has been laid to rest. His funeral was earlier this week. So where do you think we should go from there? Where should Milwaukee go? Like, where do we go from here?
Well, I think policing in general, I think there needs to be a lot of changes. You know, with these shootings, officers are put on paid administrative leave, and then the department investigates it itself. And I don't know how the police can investigate the police. I think you almost need, like, a civilian panel that would be side by side with the police investigation, step by step, to see if shootings are justified or not justified. And I think there also needs to be changes with mental health within the police department. I think officers need to be evaluated every several years, and they also have to keep a strict record of, you know, if they've had any negative experiences with the community in the past. You know, they said that Dominic Keegan tased somebody and had unjustified use of force in April. And if that was true, you know, why is he back out on the street to lead to this altercation.
Well, these are all very interesting points, and we will keep this close to heart and see how the story evolves from there.
And hopefully, you know, that the movement will, you know, not turn racist like it had been, like just going against any, you know, white people in the area, that they focus their energies more towards the problem instead of just lashing out at people that weren't involved in the incident.
Agreed. So, our next topic of the day. We can't get away from this. Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco 49ers quarterback, has been making some waves by making a political statement during the preseason by refusing to stand during the playing of the national anthem. And it's been getting a lot of, I guess, generating a lot of controversy. If we could get that clip played of Colin Kaepernick's statement.
Accomplish. What would you like this, you know, to be the end game for you?
That's basically. I mean, ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for, and that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for: freedom, liberty, justice for all, and it's not happening for all right now.
Is this something that's evolved in terms of philosophy in your mind, and how has this kind of progressed that you make a stand like this?
It's something that I've seen, I've felt, wasn't quite sure how to deal with originally, and it is something that's evolved. It's something as I've gained more knowledge about, you know, what's going on in this country in the past, what's going on currently. These aren't new situations. This isn't new ground. It's things that have gone on in this country for years and years and have never been addressed, and they need to be.
Colin,
what's going to happen for you
to sit?
Yes, I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change, and when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
All right, so that was the statement, the explanation given by San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick on the reason why he sat during the playing of the national anthem during preseason. So this action or inaction has generated a lot of feedback from supporters and detractors alike. One being Tommy Lahren, who is a American television and online video host and conservative political commentator. She's currently a host for The Blaze. If we could play that clip.
Welcome back. Oh, Colin Kaepernick, I've got some final thoughts for you, bud. See, our buddy Colin decided not to stand for the national anthem because, well, this, he will not stand to show pride in a flag or a country that oppresses black people. For him, it's bigger than football. He would be selfish to look the other way. After all, according to Kaepernick, there are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder. So let me go ahead and eviscerate this mouth diarrhea for you sentence by sentence. Here we go. Colin, I support the First Amendment. I support your right to freedom of speech and expression. Go for it, bud. It's this country, the country that you have so much disdain for, that allows you the right to speak your mind. It protects your right to be a whiny, indulgent, attention-seeking crybaby. It also protects my right to shred you for it. See, the national anthem and our flag, they are not symbols of black America, white America, brown America, or purple America, for that matter. There are patriots of every race that have fought and died for this country, and we honor the flag and sing the anthem as a reminder. And Colin, if this country disgusts you so much, leave. I guarantee there are thousands and thousands of people around the world that would gladly take your spot. Because those that don't live under this flag are banging on the door to get in, not get out. Remember that. Is our country perfect? No. But what have you done to make it better? What's your contribution? Sitting there like a fool? What selfish is you, buddy? And what's your message to black kids, to people of color, that their biggest contribution to justice and self-fulfillment is to parade around with a chip on their shoulder like a victim? And Colin, how dare you sit there and blame white people for the problems of minority communities? After all, aren't you half white? Didn't two white parents adopt you after yours weren't willing to raise you? For a racist and horrible country filled with racist and horrible white people, that's really something, isn't it? Maybe you should also decline the paycheck from the white owner of your team or the white fans that buy your merchandise and fill the stands to watch you play. There's a statement I don't see you making anytime soon. And Colin, who's getting away with murder? I'd like to see some evidence to back that up, because that's a pretty strong claim. And what about the oppression of black people? It's funny. Through that six-year career of yours, you choose to start sitting now? What changed to make you so resentful of your country? Please tell me how you're oppressed. Is it because the black unemployment rate is double what it is for whites, or the homicide rate, or the dropout rate, or the percentage of minority communities on food stamps? Well, we've had a black president for almost 8 years now. Maybe he failed you. We also have a black woman in charge of the Justice Department. Maybe she failed you too. Or maybe it's the liberals, your saviors, which have run your communities into the ground. Where does the buck stop? When will those in black communities take a step back and take some responsibility for the problems in black communities? Because it seems to me blaming white people for all of your problems might make you the racist. But Colin, you don't care about any of that. You want to make a political statement. But here's the deal, Colin. I've got loved ones overseas right now fighting for your right to sit on a bench and bitch and moan about your perceived oppression while making $19 million a year to throw a ball. So show a little respect. And if you want to sit down, now's the time, on the bench, because you suck. But perhaps you should stand up for the anthem. God bless from Dallas. Good night, and take care.
All righty, so that was Tommy Ryan from The Blaze, her response to the Colin Kaepernick controversy.
That's a lot to digest from what she said there. I thought Colin handled himself well, and I felt that she didn't handle herself well. She came off being...
Go ahead.
I said she just came off as being very whiny, negative, and, in my opinion, racist. And I support, you know, what he did. That's just me. I mean, we have freedom of speech, and I give her freedom of speech for what she said, but I'm just not in agreement with her. I didn't see where he said he hated the country or should leave the country or anything like that. I mean, what's your opinion on what was said?
Well, I think there's a lot going on there, that's for sure. I mean, okay, you basically have, like, two main things happening here. You have Colin Kaepernick, who, granted, is a very high, well-paid professional athlete who has had this career with the NFL for several years now, and... to be honest with you, unless you're like a football fan, you probably, you know, the regular rank and file person in the U.S., like girls like me, who don't really pay attention to sports, wouldn't know who he is, you know, until this happened.
I didn't know who he was. I don't watch football, so I didn't know who he was till this happened, yeah.
Right. So you do have this controversy of him sitting during the national anthem. Now, the national anthem, of course, here in this country, is played before just about every single sporting event and imaginable, whether it be a little league game, or pee wee football, all the way to the pros. So, for him to make that to be sitting during that, yes, that is going to raise some eyebrows there. So we have that. Like, does he have?
I just wonder how his teammates feel about that. You know, have any of his teammates spoken up about that?
Well, there are several. Even the coach has said that they will support his right to protest. So, for the most part, it seems that he is getting that support. There are players within the NFL who've spoken out and who say that, you know, even though he disagrees, or like that's not the place. Like, this is not the way to do this. This is not the way to raise awareness to the issue of his concern by sinning.
And I saw that the police department in that city had also sent a letter complaining about his actions to the team and also to the NFL. So, you know, I haven't heard if the NFL responded to that or not. But, you know, I think he could also reach out on Twitter or different social media like that. And really what he says off the field is really his opinion and his business.
Well, see, that's the thing. He can definitely do that while he's off the field, but the question is, while the rest of his teammates and the other team and the majority of the audience are standing for the national anthem, is it right? Is it right for him to be using that as a platform to get his message across?
I think if it was me personally, I would probably just stand and then voice my opinions off the field. And, you know, I think he has to consider what his teammates feel also and, you know, what the local community feels also. But, you know, as far as him off the field, I think he could say whatever he wants to say.
I mean, I would agree with you on that. I will say this, like, look, you know, as a person of color living in the United States, you know, look, this country is not perfect. That is for sure.
Very perfect.
Exactly. And I will be one of the first people to, like, point out, you know, the wrongs of what's going on. However, I am proud to be an like the song says, I am proud to be an American. You know, I am proud. And, if you know, I've been to many a game where if you have the right person singing that first verse of the Star Spangled Banner, it will move me to tears, you know, because you really, really start thinking about, you know, Francis Scott Key being on the ship during the War of 1812, you know, talking about the, you know, rockets' red glare and the bombs bursting in air gave proof through the night that our flag is still there. You know, it makes you proud. It makes you proud, and it makes you, it really makes you feel like the sacrifices that people have made so we could have our freedom.
Yeah, I think we live in the best country in the world. I wouldn't want to move anyplace else, you know, but like you said, it's not perfect, and there's still room for improvement here. But out of anywhere else, I'll take this country over any country.
Yeah, see, the one thing, though, about this whole controversy, someone made the point that, you know, we do sing only the first verse of the Star Spangled Banner, because it is a pretty long song. Like, I think this thing has, let's see, how is it? One, two, it's like, it's got to be, it's four sections, four verses, I guess. But someone made the point to, on the third verse, that actually it's more of a reflection of Francis Scott Key of that time and his attitude towards race and slavery. Because if you go to the third verse, it says, and where is that band who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country, should leave us no more? Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the doom of the grave. Spangled banner in triumph doth wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. And some people have said that this is actually alluding to a slave rebellion or slave revolt, that there were some slaves who tried to escape and, you know, they're not going to be able to escape the grave. you know, so on the one hand, you have this song that, you know, it was written in during the War of 1812. So
during slavery.
Had slavery in this country. Yeah, we had slavery in this country. Yeah, and the attitude was that there were certain groups of people that were meant to be ruled over by other groups of people, whether that be, you know, Africans, whether that be Native Americans, whether that be women, whether that be, you know, Jewish people, Catholics, whatever. So definitely this is not a verse we really sing during our celebration, and maybe there's a reason for that.
It seems like the omitted verse.
The omitted verse, yeah. it's like when you think about like certain parts of the Bible in the Old Testament, like, you know, there's a lot of rules that go on, and then there's that part about don't eat any shellfish, and you're like, oh, but I really need to eat shrimp. We'll omit that verse.
Or don't
keep
eat
moving.
Or
exactly. And there's not. Exactly. There's nothing like having some good slices of bacon during
yeah,
Sunday brunch. But in all seriousness, so you have that. So is this the right platform for him to be taking this kind of stand? But then you have Tony Lauren's response, which is Tony Lauren from The Blaze, and that response. Like,
well, her
way from the right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her response, I think, is just pandering to her audience. And everything, most of the stuff she mentioned in there, I didn't even get out of his conversation. Like, she's talking about his disdain for the country and that he feels every single person is oppressed. And I didn't get that. He just said that, hey, there's some social injustice in the country and some people aren't being treated fairly. And I think that needs to change. That's what I got from him. What I got from her was almost like pure hate speech, you know?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, I Googled her, and, you know, she is not a bad-looking woman. You know, she's, you know, very, very blonde, very petite, very, you know, very has that all-American California blonde or Southern Belle look to her. So
mm-hmm.
I agree that it does seem that this is she definitely knows her audience.
Yeah, I think some people just shoot their mouth off because they know it'll get them ratings, you know. And probably with her audience, that's going to ring real true and, you know, get her higher ratings and get her more media attention. So.
My question is, though, like, you know, listening to that, if I wouldn't know who she is, you know, I would think, like, she's missing the point on one hand. Like, I think that, we live in a great country, but we don't have a right to complain?
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought it was David Duke's daughters talking or something like that, but, you know, because I just sense some racism in what she was saying. You know, bringing up the fact that he was adopted, which I think has no relevance, and who adopted him, I didn't think had any relevance. The fact that he was biracial, I didn't think really had any relevance to his statements or anything.
Well, apparently her sentiments are echoed by quite a few of the conservatives. Donald Trump even had to put in his two cents. He actually said when he was asked about it, he said maybe he should find a country that works better for him if he doesn't love the U.S. enough. And this is a quote that he gave during an interview on Seattle's KIRO radio. He says, I think it's a terrible thing when he was asked about his decision to skip it. I think it's a terrible thing. And, you know, maybe he should find a country that works better for him. Let him try. It won't happen.
Well, I don't think that Colin doesn't like the country. I don't think he ever said that he didn't like the country. I think he sees that there's some inequity in it, and he's using his position within the NFL to try to help that situation. I don't think he loathes the United States, and I don't think he wants to move anywhere. And I don't think that he thinks every person's being oppressed, but certain people are in certain neighborhoods and communities.
But do you think that we are, or this is giving fuel to the Donald Trumps of the world, to the Tommy Lahrens of the world, because of the messenger, because Colin Kaepernick is a professional athlete versus someone who is like a political figure?
Well, I think Trump is just waving the flag of patriotism to pander to his political base and to, you know, say, hey, I'm standing up for the country and try to get more votes. I think that's what he's doing. And that lady was just doing the same thing, just trying to get more media attention and more people on her Twitter and Facebook and tune into her show.
So do you think that that's more of her clearly using the situation for her own means?
Yes, I do. I definitely do.
So what do you think? Yeah, go ahead.
I thought, you know, Colin, what he said was well spoken, and I didn't sense any anger or animosity or anything in his tone or anything. I think she was just kind of like a hothead shooting her mouth off, you know, trying to stir people up.
So what do you think should be, you know, because, you know, him sitting out during the playing of the national anthem right before the game, which one could argue that's kind of part of that's part of the job. Like, of course, he has to go to practice. He has to get prepared to go to the game. When he's at the game, he's got to play the game to its fullest and hopefully help win the game. So playing of the national anthem, that he's going to be doing that all 38 games, 28 games, how many games there are in season. Is that part of the job description? Should he just be?
Personally, if it was me, I would stand up and make all my comments off field. But as far as, you know, him, I think that's just going to have to be settled between him and the team and him and the NFL, whatever they rule on. So, I mean, to me, you know, if he doesn't want to stand up, I'm not going to not watch a game because of that or not go to a game because of that. But there are some people who might do that. So I think what's going to happen is the NFL or the team is going to rule one way or the other on what he can do, and it's going to boil down to dollars. If it's costing the NFL money or the team revenues, I think they're going to make him stand up. That's what I think.
There are fans who are burning jerseys and posting that on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Those jerseys are not cheap, and they're lighting them on fire. I think, and some of them are doing it a little dangerous. I get it that everyone's trying to get the perfect money shot, but there was one that's been circulating around. The guy is lighting on fire with WD-40 and a match, and I think he's trying to do all that while holding onto his cell phone. That can't be safe.
No, it's not safe at all. Maybe he'll burn himself, and they'll have a video of that, and then it'll get a million hits and go viral. You know.
They'll pay for the cost of the jersey.
Yeah.
So what do you think is the best way for someone of Colin Kaepernick's stature to protest something like this? Like, what could he be doing? Like, is this effective? I mean, on one hand, you do have people discussing it. It is part of the discussion, but is this really going to bring about change?
It might. It might not. I mean, it might make some people more aware of the situation. People that are all wrapped up into sports, I think, might pay more attention to it than, you know, people that don't really watch the news and follow the events. And sometimes people in certain positions, when they speak, more people listen. Like, if it's just the guy on the street saying something, they're not going to listen. But if it's somebody they look up to, especially kids and youth, and, you know, they might gravitate more towards the message just because of the messenger.
This is so true. This is so true. These are all really compelling points, and we'll just see how this plays out as well. So, Bill, what are you going to be up to this week? What's happening with you?
This week, I have some activities where I'm going to be going out of state to West Virginia, down at WVU. I'm going to check out the area. I haven't been there for a while. And do some research for a future show, which I'm going to keep undercover, and I'll talk with you guys about that later. What about
nice.
You? What
Well, for me, myself, I'm going to be performing on some shows down here in Miami. As you know, I'm a stand-up comic, as well as being a host of this awesome, awesome radio show. And I'm also going to be a guest on a podcast that comes out every Monday. It's called Coming Up Short. It's hosted by some local guys down here, and they've interviewed a ton of local Miami comedians, and this, I think I'm on episode 68 or 60, 71 or something like that. I'm excited to be there. Yeah, exactly. So it's called Coming Up Short. So catch me there on Monday.
Okay, you're like a multimedia mogul there.
I'm doing my best. One download at a time. So this has been a great show. Thank you so much, Natasha Nefrini, for coming on to the show. This has been Dollar Bill, my co-host, and Rhett Thompson. This has been It's Real Talk Radio. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to It's Real Talk Radio with Tay Real and Nizzy Nay. Facebook us at It's Real Talk Radio. Tweet us at It's Real Radio MP.